All right, so with me today is Oz, who has paused his Copa Uno Turbo Hunger Strike just for the monthly update. And we also have a very special guest co-host, none other than one of my personal favorite sim racing YouTube producers. If you haven't heard of him, please check out his channel, Donk. He dabbles in AMS2 as well as other different sim racing platforms, but my personal favorite series of his is called the What Is series, where he basically tells us the real life story about some of our favorite cars. All right, so Donk, Oz, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
So today our agenda is we're going to be talking about the latest patch. Most importantly, we're going to be talking about the AI changes. We're going to be talking about the state of the AI up until the patch. We're going to be talking about Monza, of course, every aspect of Monza as well. Car combos, drivability, the historical layouts, what we can expect as sim racers, what's great about them. If there's any flaws, we'll try to point them out as well. And then finally, we're going to get into some cars and tracks that we've recently driven. But first, let's get right into the AI conversation. Oz, I'm going to kick it off to you. Let's get your impression of what the AI has been like so far up until this point. Positives and negatives.
Yeah, so AMS2 has a long history with its AI. And it has, in my eyes, since I've been playing it since early access, it has gone through various phases. The first type of AI that we got was just a very slow train.
I remember that.
Like for the first laps, yeah. Then we got crazy AI that just like did random stuff, but was already, we were kind of past the train stuff, so it was no longer just crawling through lap one, overly like cautious, and then. Then we got something that is familiar to what we have now, which is AI that tries to race you, but the behavior has gone through major updates. So one of the first things that we got is some classes started to actually have a bit different parameters. So before it used to be so that the for example, with F1, F1 might have done something crazy, just hit like rear end you, and another slower class worked correctly. So that they solved that by just having slightly different behavior between classes, and then now finally we got some nice overtaking behavior updates. Very recently, but let's talk about I'm going to talk about how it used to be just like a week ago before the Monza update. So the typical AI is very aggressive and actually races you. And this is good because I think if you race against AI, yeah, some might like just like some decorative AI that you
like ducks in a row.
You pass them one by one.
Line them up ducks in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. But the AI in MS2 is not a train. They go side by side, they fight with each other. But the problem has been is that they drive side by side for too long. And when they overtake, they tend to be too aggressive. So they like dive bomb, they cut corners. Also, going over sausage curbs, which can end up in them just launching off the curb and hitting your side. That has been the case thus far. So basically racing you, but racing you too hard, if that makes sense. But there's certainly no lack of overtaking, and they also defend and that sort of stuff.
It seems like to me that there's three different kind of areas or different aspects of AI that needs its own specific type of calibration. The AI and how they interact with the track, you know, that's the grip, the cornering characteristics, their acceleration, their starts, the AI versus AI balancing and how they interact with each other, and then the AI versus the player. And I think in each of those three phases, you could probably pick out incongruities with each of those phases. But it's important because I think in our minds, we should we should understand like the logic triggers of the AI are different for the player and the other AI, as well as the capabilities of the AI on the track itself. So the AI may know that they have superb cornering capabilities at turn one at Kyalami Historic. And so they'll take advantage of that. Now, whether or not they take advantage against an AI player or another AI, non-player or a player, it seems like there's a little bit a difference there. Like I've recognized historically a lot of the problems you've mentioned, but it seems like, for example, I think a long time ago when I was one of the times it was like really apparent in my face that there was an issue here was it was a Porsche GT3 at Imola going down the front straight lap, maybe three or four or whatever. And the brake lights are just, the AI is trying to pass another AI in front of it and the brake lights are just popping. And you're just like, why are the brake lights popping? But then if it was the same situation and you were going down the straight and the AI was behind you, they'd be, going past you. So yeah, I think if we keep it segregated in those three kind of areas, we can sort of see what the challenge is for Ryza when they're trying to program these things. But I think I also agree with you fundamentally that the positives are often overlooked. And the positives for me primarily are the ability to have a side-by-side contestant race with AI. And I was impressed, moreover, with a specific race in that regard when I was doing a Mercedes GT3 at Bathurst down the mountain section, and it was a thrilling battle. It's one of the, down the mountain section going by yourself is a harrowing experience sometimes when you're on the limit already. But when you're side by side, you have to decide, am I going to filter in or am I going to be like, you know what, I'm going to go for it and see how this goes. And I chose the latter that time and I came out fully impressed. So there's also this personality thing that they've introduced as well, which, Renato has mentioned several times. Each of the AI drivers has their own, I don't know, maybe 10 parameters, just say, throwing a number out there, ability to overtake, aggressiveness, passiveness, whether or not they're good in the wet, whether or not they start good, whether or not they're, first lap all-stars, like any characteristic that you can think of. Each of the AI have their own specific flavor to that. And I think it was a race at Santa Cruz in a GT4 where I started really recognizing the differences in personalities. Like if you passed an AI, they fell back immediately. One AI would. If you passed another AI, they were right on your tail, counterattacking. So all of these different traits I thought were just like a really interesting in absorbing and immersive challenge against the AI. Donk, you have obviously driven against the AI. What have your thoughts been up to this point?
Well, the AI started out in the early days quite easy to race against. Like I was saying, they were like train carriages going around the circuit. In recent updates, they've definitely improved a lot. The racing door-to-door is definitely there with the AI. I recently did a video of going around Nordschleife with 120 AI difficulty and maximum aggression, and it was superb, but also scary as all hell because the AI were just all over my back end trying to get past me. It was thrilling, but yeah. I sometimes think that maybe the AI is a bit too aggressive in some places. They're trying to push where they shouldn't be pushing, but I think it's definitely been a big improvement since the game first launched. Massive improvement.
Do you think that that when they're chipping at your back end, as they do, do you think it has something to do with, like, I think my impression is a lot of people overlook the fact that they might be cornering a little bit slow. Okay, that's not outside the realm of possibility here that each of us might not be maximizing our car's potential in every corner at Nordschleife. Do you think that plays an effect? Like the AI could have an advantage in that sector, or simply the player could be driving slower than they could?
I think it's definitely a player probably driving slower than they could, because I had the AI maxed out on difficulty and they were obviously trying to get past me and they were trying to find ways to get past me. On lower settings, they're quite aggressive as well. the aggression slide, I'm not sure what purpose it serves, because it doesn't seem to really change how they try to overtake you or how they right. react to you.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the aggression and the strength sliders don't seem to have that big of effect. Maybe in overall lap time, like if you do the strength, the lap time changes, okay? But it's still the same kind of, you know, AI versus the track kind of feel to it. So they could be slow in a certain sector or a certain corner, or fast in a certain sector or certain corner. It's just faster or slower. But then it's the aggression thing that I think is sort of like one of those areas where I'm not really even sure. You know, I've tried different settings, obviously, and I found I lowered it to the point where I felt like they weren't bombarding me, you know, too much, which I think I wound up at like 70. What about you, Oz? What are your settings typically? And not and don't say your strength, because we all know you drive at 120.
No, can't do 120. Okay, I'll skip the. I won't mention that I use 105 strength, but I use 90 strength aggression.
Okay. Have you done any recent tests like between the aggressions? I sort of just set it and forget it.
No, I use something about.
You just
80.
Use 90.
Yeah.
Now it's one of those things I think that they were tinkering with the latest patch too. They are rebalancing the AI. Was it strength or was it aggression? I can't tell. I can't remember. They're rebalancing the difference between 70% and 90%. There's also an element in what we learned previously is apparently if you set your AI at 100 or above, the AI are taking into consideration quote unquote setup adjustments that they don't usually do, so they could be even faster on a per track basis. Maybe take advantage of that. But let's talk about the patch and what they've attempted to address here. Now, a lot of these times, I'll preface this, it seems like they've done a lot. And sometimes when you do a lot, you uncover a lot of other different issues that pop up. So Oz, can you break it down for us? What were the latest improvements, or at least the important ones that you think that have the biggest impacts on us as drivers?
So just going by the change log, the biggest thing is that they've improved the AI overtaking logic and also adjusted lateral movements, so you get smoother and more natural reactions. So, I mean, I'll just address the latter one. So it can look weird when the AI is doing like those really quick side swipes. So mm-hmm. that should take care of that to a degree. But when it comes to AI behavior, so not just calibration and physics, because that's another area, but if they are behind you and you both break into a corner, you both turn into a corner, I think that's when the overtaking logic applies. Right. So the result of the update has been somewhat dramatic for me, because it seems to me like I can trust the AI not to be a complete idiot and just like dive bomb me. So now I don't have to defend like by cutting the corner. Well, you didn't necessarily have to do that before, but I don't have to be like scared of the AI just not necessarily dive bombing me, but like taking actually just cutting the corner to a degree.
Yeah.
So they need to have good space in order for them to go for a move. And there was even another. So if anyone out there tried the latest update and is not impressed, there was another, there was a hotfix just now that adjusted the AI to start their passing routine sooner. So that could affect,
I see.
I don't know for sure, but that could affect, you know, that could affect if they still rear end you or not, because they have to start it sooner. So it kind of sounds like it's one of those things. And there has also been adjustments to brake power and grip. So there's a lot of stuff, but for me, the result was that I threw a lot of combinations at them, and but it just seemed like whatever I throw at them, they will behave aggressive, but also nice and not overly aggressive. It still leaves other parts of the AI that can be not perfect. Right. Depending on the track and car, etc. But that's another thing. This behavior thing is kind of the ceiling for everything. Even if you have a perfectly calibrated everything, you could be annoyed by the AI because they're too aggressive. So then, you know, that limits to how good the AI can be, or your impression of it.
Yeah, I felt that the one of the biggest things you talked about for me was the jinkiness. Now, that's obviously an immersion breaker when you see them just laterally moving side to side, like full steering lock going, you know, 200 km/h. It just doesn't look right. And they've scaled that back over time. The situation that occurs that frustrates me the most is in the braking zones. They have a tendency, if there's a lane next to them, to jink. You know, if they're in the inside lane in a braking zone in a corner, and there's the outside lane is open, they'll jink to the outside lane very dramatically. And if you're the player approaching them thinking that you have, you know, that lane is open for you, it gives you zero reaction time. And a lot of the times, the logic to change their behavior triggers too late. And so I remember seeing a lot of clips where the AI would jink into the human player from the inside to the outside lane right before corner entry in the middle of the trail braking and just knock the player off the track. That was particularly frustrating. Entertaining to watch, but frustrating.
I think I've also seen that on the reverse side as well, where they're trying to avoid the player. They'll jink quite aggressively as well.
Right.
So that's a good point. And each of those jinks, I think we should all interpret as like a logic trigger of some sort.
Okay.
So, and logic is an important, you know, obviously people say logic this, logic that, but one of the aspects of driving against AI that if you do it a lot, you'll start to figure out these logic triggers and more importantly, how to predict them. So it's part of the experience of driving into AI. So if you come into the game and you install it for the first time and you're driving into AI, it's going to be completely different from you than, you know, you've gotten 200, 300 hours into the game and you've driven against AI exclusively. At 300 hours, if you haven't figured out their own peculiarities, then, you know, you should have at that point, I should be saying. But there's certain things that you can do as a driver that I've found that mitigate this or manipulate the logic in a certain way. So you can have all the AI acting more predictable based on what you're doing on track. And things like I have a tendency to really block aggressively. If I feel that I've passed an AI on a certain corner, but it compromised my corner, right, to accomplish the pass. And then you look in the rearview mirror and you see the AI just like creeping in and they're on your corner paddles. The next corner, I don't try to approach it as if I am, you know, doing a hot lap by myself. I usually aggressively block and I block early. Like I move to the inside lane way early. And then I wait for the AI trigger, their AI logic to trigger, and then they'll move to the outside lane. And that's what, then I would key off of that and move farther to the outside to get as much room as I need to get to get a good entry for the next corner. Does that make sense? The other thing was the side by side racing that I've done. A lot of the times you can't be pensive. I found like if you're aggressive, sometimes it suits you. So for example, you're in lap one at, you know, Olton Park or something like that, and everyone's bunched together, and the car in front of you is sort of taking the middle lane, and then the car in front of that AI is on the inside lane. If you see that gap there, go for it. You know, especially if they're in the middle of the corner, go for that gap. Because the outside car is not going to turn in on you a lot of the times. If the logic has already been triggered and it's already taken that outside line. And that can help you get an overtake there too. If you hang back, you know, that's one more corner, one more, you know, passing zone that you have to wait for up the track to try to get that player again. But I always found that going for that gap and getting tucked in right behind a car in front of you, it sort of like tells all the AI, okay, back off. This is my lane. This is my spot. And then they sort of just kind of fade away a little bit after that. Donk, have you experienced any of those, or do you use any of those tactics when you're driving?
It's true. I think being more aggressive definitely helps to get past the AI. I've also noticed that once the AI get past you, this might be placebo or something, but I tend to think they slow down as well. They're not as quick as they were before they were trying to overtake you. But as soon as they get past, they sort of go into like a safe state where, okay, we've got past this person now. It's time to calm down and be a bit more safe through these corners and slow down a little bit.
I have a word for that, actually. I call it the red mist. When you pass a certain AI, and depending on their personalities, when they counterattack, they can't be satisfied unless they get into you some way. Like you pass them and they're hounding you. Every little inch that you give them, they're going for, and you can see that they're leaning towards it. If you give a half a lane to the inside, you can see them creeping over to get in there. And I think that's what also probably causes a lot of the corner cutting issues as well. But yeah, that's the red mist is what I call it. But yeah, definitely, if they get past you, it's sort of like they go back to... Well, have you any of you guys... Actually, this is a question. Have any of you guys played any, like... Motorsport Manager games or games where I think even Gran Turismo had this function where you could do a endurance race where you would drive and then you could have an AI take over, but you'd still be the race director and tell them when to push or when to not push, or you know, to cool to back off or manage the pace, I guess. Have you guys ever played any games like that?
Yeah, I have played Motorsport Manager, and yeah, I'm familiar with that dynamic.
Yeah, that's what I think is what's going on. Like they have, you know, they get overtaken, and their race director or the race engineer is like, "You got to get him back," you know. And then as soon as they are successful, you know, they pass you back. They're like, "Okay, back off, guy, back off now," you know, and they get back to the normal pace. But maybe there is that difference is too drastic. I think maybe that's and to be honest with you, again, like what we mentioned before was, you know, how the AI is programmed to interface with the track itself is a big part of this too. So the AI we know is programmed differently than the human player. They could program them to have, you could have Formula Ultimate down grip ability in a Copa Uno Oz if they wanted to. So that all of that has to be calibrated, appropriate. That sounds fantastic, doesn't it?
Really?
They have to be calibrated to be realistic, I guess. And what I'm saying is the AI has to be programmed to take advantage of, say, 80% of their grip ability. Maybe 80% is aggressive to us. In certain circumstances, maybe it's not. You know what I mean?
So am I right in thinking that the AI are not running on the same physics as the player?
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, as a further note, because there was a discussion about this on the forum somewhere, or somewhere on the internet, I no longer remember, but there was a discussion about this, and apparently this was also the case in R Factor 1, and it's also the case in R Factor 2. But for reasons, it just... The physics difference between the player and the AI just seems more dramatic in the madness. I think it's in the madness engine.
And there's a practical reason for that, though.
So the reason there is, yes, the practical reason is because the physics are so complex. Funnily enough. That it's not really practical or possible to run the AI with player physics. But what's more important is that you have games where the AI runs with the same physics. It's not a guarantee that the AI will be like fantastic. Like I think it might even, there was a comment that it might even make it more difficult to get them be like well calibrated, because then the AI needs to know how to drive the car, which, yeah, I mean, it's still an issue. Like, calibration is still an issue. The only thing that I get is that it will look a bit funny if the AI can do some things. Like, the difference can be subtle, but the AI can do some things different from the player. What actually bugs me more than anything is that I could be wrong, but from the AI races I've done, the AI doesn't, for now, hasn't really gotten into, if you drive the Uno, for example, they don't really get into nice liftoff oversteer slides, or maybe this is the same with the F Vintage, which you're kind of sliding that thing is out of corners is kind of right. Its whole thing. I'm not entirely sure if that's how the AI car works.
No, it's not. I would imagine it's not, because I frequently see myself in a replay and I'm pushing the car and the car's all over the place and the AI is just like silky smooth going at the same pace. It's frustrating to watch. But yeah, okay. So that's a good well, actually, there's one more thing I want to get into before we cap off the AI discussion, and that's blue flag behavior. Now, as you know, blue flags are an important part of both endurance racing as well as modern, you know, say F1 or GP style formula racing. But the blue flag behavior or the blue flag rules are different for those two series. And they've done some work with blue flags. Apparently, previously, the AI were not respecting blue flags. But now they've programmed some blue flag behavior, but they might have overshot. Now, from what I've heard in some discussions that I've read, and this isn't firsthand, this is all hearsay, was that the AI are behaving in an endurance context, say multi-class, as if they were in a GP context, like a Formula One, whereas if you're being lapped, you have the obligation to get out of the way of the leaders, whereas in the endurance context, you're not. Do you think that this is accurate, if you have the experience doing it, Oz? Do you think it's something that they're able to bifurcate by car class? Is it something that they can, you know, change if it's a GT3 versus GT3 and GT4 or Formula car?
I haven't really been testing the blue flag stuff, but knowing Rizeite's probably something that they will do, differentiate between,
right.
So for example, F1, you have different set of rules versus GT3 and multi-class. What is even more important to me is, in the future, could there be a personality like Eddie Irvine who just respecting the blue flag, you take it as a message to, as a command to, hey, this, you're a backmarker, so please race this this first place driver, right here.
Now, would that be frustrating to a human player, though? Like, if you're, like, I know a lot of people like realism in sim racing. Like, everyone talks about, oh, I want punctures. Oh, I want engine failures.
Nobody, really? Nobody wants Eddie Irvine.
But is there a personality, like, I'm sure that they could do it, have, a 5% chance of ignoring a blue flag. Like, that would be amazing. But there's no stewards either, so maybe there would be no there's nowhere to complain to. You're just stuck behind it and no one knows, and you're just stuck behind the guy and he just refuses to yield. But all right, so that's a good cap. Let's move on to the big part of the update, I guess you could say, and that's Monza and all of the variations within it, contained within this patch. Now, this is a DLC, guys, and as you know, DLCs for anyone, you can race them in multiplayer so long as the host has the DLC. But in order to race them single player, you have to have the DLC, which I think is actually quite reasonably priced for what you get. So Oz, do you want to go over the rundown of the layouts and what we're going to be getting, or what we've gotten with this DLC?
Yes. So first off, we have Monza, the I don't know what you would call it, just the the Monza layout. So the modern
modern
GP layout, which is the one with the with the T1 that everyone loves and nobody ever crashes there, and then you got the junior layout of that. There's a corner like right-hander before T1, and then you just sort of shortcut half of the track, and then you're on the back straight, and then you get to the what's it called these days? I forgot the name, but it used to be called
Alboreto.
Yeah, that one. It used to be called Parabolica, and so that's the junior layout. But then you have the historic 91 version, which is importantly much different. I mean, the basic idea is the same. It is still Monza, but it's kind of like an uncanny Monza, if you will.
Yeah.
Because it feels different in a lot of the areas. But most importantly, T1 is actually a double chicane. And
right.
Many people, including me, have said that it has much nicer flow. Because you drive into it quite fast, and then you get to ride the curbs. And then you get to set up for the second chicane, and then you ride the curbs again. So it's kind of... it's kind of like Adelaide to a degree, Adelaide T1, mm-hmm. but there are two of them, and then you can have some fantastic crashes there as well. Like for example, I spun at least once, like trying to get a bit too much curb. But I suppose if people play it online, there should be less crashes there because it's not such a. You don't slow. That much. I mean, you do slow down, but you don't like slow way down where everyone looks at it as a chance to win the whole race by somehow dive bombing.
there's a preparation to that chicane that you have to take into account to get through the second chicane. And I think there's that little subtle right before the first braking zone. You have to orient your car there to get that first left, the hard left.
Yeah.
Whereas the modern GP, it's sort of just like your hair's on fire, you're slamming the brakes, ABS is going crazy, you're closing your eyes, and you just hope that you outbrake somebody next to you. It's a completely different entry.
It is.
But the point being is like the second chicane is, in order to get a good run out of the second chicane, you have to use the first chicane as a, you know, sort of, you have to approach it a lot different than the modern version. The other thing I think is important to point out is that Even though it's a high speed braking zone, they're always going to have issues with high speed braking zones. Whenever there's a bunch of cars piled up together, especially at a start, and I'm not saying that this layout gets rid of that, but what it does do, I think it does a lot better than the modern version, is it doesn't necessarily orient chaos back on to the track again. You know, where cars are trying to re-enter and spinning out and they're getting right back onto the exit. You know, the 91 version, it seems like if you have an issue, you're in gravel, you're going to be hitting tire barriers. That's going to hold off all the people that are involved in an incident from instantly trying to gun the throttle and get back on track and cause more problems, right?
Yeah.
So that's a great addition. Also, I think with that layout, they adjusted the Lesmos as well. Well, not I shouldn't say they adjusted it. It has a more the older style of Lesmo 1 and Lesmo 2. I think it's way more flat out with the modern I guess you'd say formula cars. Anything with aero, you can take it a lot harder than you can with the modern version, right?
Yeah, you can. But it has the same issue with high downforce as modern Monza, which is, well, not issue. I should say challenge, which is how low downforce do you want to go? Because there's that balance between minimizing drag, so maximizing top speed, you know, which means you also need to adjust your gearing. We'll get to that later, I suppose. But yeah, just the balance between low downforce and actually surviving these high-speed turns. So you could actually, it can get so close that you can barely get through LESMO 2 flat out in an older F1 car, because you have so low downforce in order to, you know, maximize. Because Monza is a lot of it's a lot of straights, so you want to make sure that you have a lot of good top speed. So there's that difficult balance between the two.
I agree. I think that Spa is similar in a way, because you have the Kemmel, and that you have to account for Kemmel. But but I think Monza exaggerates that player choice to a degree where I find Monza to be one of my favorite tracks of all time, despite Turn 1 and despite the conception that it's boring because it's so often driven in the multiplayer context. I always find myself, it's a personal challenge kind of track as well. It just suits it. It suits it for it because, you know, you could go one way or the other and your lap times could be the same. Like, you could go a little bit more downforce and be faster in one area and slower in the high speeds, or vice versa. Your lap times would be same. It'd just be like how you like to drive the cars. And I love testing there, and I love trying to find that balance. You could go overboard in either direction. And I think with the tire temperatures, that should be a concern as well. But all right, so that's modern GP. And we talked about 91. What about the 71 variants? Have you had any track time with those bad boys?
Yes, I have. And I have also driven those in other sims before. The 71 is I have to confess that I'm not too familiar how is it different from the, I think Project Cars 2 had the 67 layout or something like that, maybe AC as well. But the,
I think historically they had a lot of different changes in that time frame. But the one that Ryza focused on was the 71 version. Now 71, I know the one with the banking with no chicanes, they didn't use that in Formula One anymore. The chicanes were introduced in 66 for Formula cars. I think the banking was used for other racing series. I'm not even sure, but it certainly existed. That's why there's similarities between the 71 road circuit and the 71 oval circuit. And then you have the chicanes. The chicanes are obviously a 1966 introduction. They're just taking a snapshot of that in 1971 as opposed to 66, if that makes sense.
The chicane is only for the 10-kilometer layout, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the chicane, the 10-kilometer high-speed banking circuit with the chicanes, and there's one without chicanes.
Yeah, gotcha. So in 71 in F1, they didn't use the oval at all, I think. So they only used the basic Monza layout, which is similar to what we have today. But it is even more uncanny because it doesn't have any chicanes. So you just go flat out until you have to slow down, because old F1 cars cannot make those. Like, Curva Grande is a bit it's a bit different, but certainly you cannot make it flat out in a vintage or a retro. Well, actually, I haven't tried retro, but at least the vintage F1 cars cannot make it flat out. Same with Lesmos. But you can make Ascari flat out, crucially. Well, you have to lift a bit and set the car up, like, because F vintage has a funky suspension, so sometimes just lifting a bit can, like, make all the difference. But so that's the 71 layout. It's really fast, but at the same time, if you drive it with cars with F1 cars that fit the time period, I think it's the last layout. I think that the other thing was that it was the last layout without the chicanes, but I could be wrong about that as well. So you pretty much should use the F vintage Gen 2.
Honestly, I think it's the new Kyalami Historic. Honestly, I think it's going to be a fan favorite for casual league you know, Wednesday nights, you know, the have fun kind of, let's all just get into something fun and like a Lotus 23 and take it around Monza 71. And then you have a choice between that and the banking. Depends on how much horsepower is involved, I guess. But
the banking, though, the oval version is, I had an online race there. And the thing about that is you're mostly, okay, so half, I don't know how, I don't know if it's actually half of the lap time is spent on the oval, but let's just say half of the time you're going to be flat out just trying to optimize your top speed and minimizing scrub and whatever speed losses in the bankings. And and especially at the oval, also at the 71 layout, but especially at the oval plus, I mean, what we call it 10K layout, which is oval plus the 71 layout. So especially in the 10K layout, if you race the F Vintage, there is absolutely no reason to go for the V8 or the DFV. You absolutely have to pick the V12 because like I said, like Monza is about top speed in a way in general, but if you add if you add like double its length and add some oval, you bet your ass you're gonna want to pick the car with the best top speed. So
well, I haven't driven the G1 M2, but I've driven the G1 M1 and I've absolutely loved it. Now the thing I would think that would be frustrating, because I watched a stream of some G1 M2 at that the banked oval without the chicane, obviously.
Hold on, which one is which? So M2 is G2 M2 is
the Jim Clark Lotus 49,
right?
G1 M1. That's the, you know, the the classic Jim Clark Formula Vintage.
Which one? Which ones are the V12s?
The V12s are the M2s, Model 2s.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I think after that you start getting into the classics, right? No, you get into the retros after that.
Yeah, you get to the retros, yeah.
So I did the movie Grand Prix, you know? Are you familiar with that movie? I guess you've seen the
I've seen those.
Some
those
of the memes.
Yeah, nice footage. Yeah, I recommend
that car. Yeah. And I was watching some of the a stream of it, and it was actually kind of frustrating to watch. Number one, because I was nervous about it in multiplayer context. After that, before I thought it would be great. Oh yeah, multiplayer is gonna be great with this car. It's gonna be great. Let's all do public lobbies in it and just fly around, go top speed, especially in the G1 M1. It's made perfect for it. But then I watch a stream and I realize that a lot of people don't change the gearing on the cars, and the speed differences between the people that have the gearing changes and the ones that don't. And I did an AI race with it too, and it's shocking. Like in the beginning of the race, because the race you have to do a ratio adjustment to get to maximize top speed, and then you also have to lengthen the sixth gear. Okay, so you can get really, really fast in it if you really want to, but you're sacrificing the road course, and in all of the other people on defaults, they're all going to be swarming you and swamping you during the road course. And then on the high speed banking, if you know what you're doing with the tuning the cars with the gearing, you're flying past them at 20 to 30 kilometers per hour in some cases. And that's freaky and probably not realistic. It's sort of like arcadey at that point. But ultimately, I think it's going to be fun, so long as everybody is on the same page. It's different, same skill levels, but also same setup levels.
So it's not that it's arcadey. It's just that the racing teams didn't do their job.
Against the AI, it was. Against the AI, it was like literally like pole position. I was like weaving from the left side to the right side and going between two. It was fantastic experience, but also it wasn't realistic because
what do you guys think of the overall atmosphere of the tracks? I mean, especially the historic ones, because I think Razor has absolutely nailed the historic track with all this massive billboards. It really takes you back to that sort of time period. It makes you feel like you're in that sort of era of racing. I think it's absolutely superb. I mean, because obviously we didn't have the technology back then too, before the cameras. So as you race around a track, you get all these beautiful, massive signboards, sponsor boards. I think the overall ethos is just really, really good.
Yeah.
No, I think the aesthetic is great. I mean, the one thing that I remember racing the 71 layout was how simplistic the grandstands were and how the oversized billboards got me. I thought that was all well done. And I remember driving through the road course, and there's a certain camera angle, thanks to Todd Norbury, where you're coming through, like, I think it's after Curve Grande, and then heading up to the Lesmos, where like the seasonal foliage started kicking in, and it reminded me of like a drive through countryside more than a racetrack, and that struck me.
Nice.
Oz, do you have any moments?
Or
are you all business? It's all about
no. I do appreciate the aesthetic of these historic tracks. Also, the modern tracks are usually very high quality. What I will say about, I drove on the 91 layout and I saw a Fiat Uno banner. You know, that was that. I deemed it the highest. Yes. Do I need to say more?
The highest level of detail. Unexpected detail that you appreciated more than most.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this is, the 91 layout could have, it could be full of holes. It could be on fire. It could force me to drive a modern touring car through it. It would still be the best layout because it has a Fiat Uno ad. So that was my, impression. But other than that, they look really nice. They have a races track. People are really like great artists because it's not just about getting the track done and getting like adding all the detail, but it's
right.
They have a certain
aesthetic touch.
Yes, which is I guess it's one of those things. You either have it or you don't. But well, that's neither here or there. But the point is that you can see that there's a lot of nice detail, and we also know that there was a thread about this on the forum. There will be more. More detail will be added afterwards. We don't know for how long, but Reza has a really good record on updating tracks like forever, but especially premium tracks, which this is premium track DLC. So they, these are like more than acceptable at the moment, but they will get even better detail wise, and like art wise, and also optimization will be better. I could almost bet. So yeah, there's still a lot of, wherever they are now, they will be better in.
Right, it's not gonna get worse.
Well, it's not gonna hopefully not. But like better, like actually better in ways you can clearly see. Maybe there will be another Fiat Uno banner. Who knows?
Maybe now that they know, they might be just throwing them all over the place. Donk, what about you? What did you think?
I was watching Gamma Muscle race it on his stream a few days ago, and he seemed to be having fun with it. But he did take out the shifter car, which I thought was a bit of a weird combo for Monza, because obviously the shifter car has got nowhere near enough power to get around the track. But from what I've seen, I really like them.
What about the seasonal foliage? That wrapped everything up together nicely. I'm starting to get why they introduced it. It just brings... Everyone can say, oh, Monza, meh, or whatever. You know, I've been to Monza 100,000 times and tired of Monza, but you've never been to this Monza because the seasonal foliage, it just adds that, it just wraps everything up so nice. I could see why they concentrated on it so much. It just adds so much life to the cars instead of seeing like some 2D green trees in winter. Like, when you switch it to winter in AMS2, it's, it's barren trees and snow on the ground. There's something that they should get credit for more than they do. Okay, so let's wrap up Monza, and let's get into some cars and tracks we've driven recently. Really quick, Donk, let's start off with you. Have you Have you been impressed with any cars and car and track combos recently that you'd want to talk about a little bit?
Yeah, I was really impressed. Quick plug here for you is with your recent league race we've just raced with the BMW M1 at historic Hockenheim. I was really impressed with how far the BMW M1 has come along since its first conception into the game. It performs really well, it handles really well, and also Hockenheim was just a perfect combo for that particular car. Absolutely fantastic. That's definitely one of the standouts for me at the moment.
I think it's become a lot more predictable, and it's from what I remember when I first drove it, and we've talked about the M1 before, but it had a certain bar of level of competency to take it to the next level that you required. Like, you really had to understand how to control a car that was unlocking its diff in the mid corner, and to a large degree it relied on that on rotation. But now the front tends to turn in a lot more, and it allows you as the player to get comfortable on turn in. And then you start applying that power, and that's where the beauty of the M1 comes through. I think with the throttle engagement and how you can get the thing power sliding under the right circumstances, it's just a beautiful thing. What about you, Oz? Any cars that you've driven that stood out recently?
Well, first of all, yeah, I have to agree about the M1. I think it's still polarizing because not everyone likes how it is still, like, you could say it's still understeery, but it has been unlocked, not to be confused with diff unlocking, but unlocked in the ways you described. But I've driven this gets to me testing the AI. So I've tried hot cars at Long Beach,
hot cars
at Long Beach.
Hot cars.
which is a funky combination, you could say. I drove the Fusca H, the HC2 version, so don't ask me how that's different from the HC1 version. You can look it up on Cars of AMS2 though, that was interesting because there was absolutely no drama for me. No drama. The only problem was
AI wise,
no drama. Okay. They were handling it. The only problem seemed to be related to maybe their physics calibration. They didn't quite have the top speed I had, and maybe also, like, you know, just AI lines. But we don't have to talk about that more. But they will get that stuff done. It was so refreshing to see that, you know what, they are racing at Long Beach side by side, and they just don't like getting too massive wrecks all the time. and actually having a nice race there. And I know...
So nobody jumped over the fountain?
Yeah, for example, none of that, as far as I know.
Oh, that's good.
And maybe Todd Norbury or someone like that. But yeah, did... And then I also tried the GTEs at Daytona. I drove the RSR. And again, very good race AI behavior-wise. I only got into a thing with the AI, but that could, in the bus stop, entering the bus stop thing. But that could have been my fault because I actually took too much curb, and that may have triggered the AI to think that, oh, he's not gonna be side by side. So what happened is I did an AI dive bomb into the AI. So I guess that doesn't count. A shame because I had a nice race up until that point, but I messed it up. But yeah, that was good too. Didn't seem to. Okay, maybe the only thing was that, again, it felt maybe that I had more top speed, but that could be one of those things where I was just better at utilizing draft than the AI and, like, choosing lanes. But then, you know, I was also, speaking of going back to Monza a bit, I was test driving the F FV12 and Group C there. So the FV12 is just because you have to. Similar to the F Classic. It suits that that era of Monza.
Right.
And that was interesting because you get to really figure out how low can I go with the wings and what kind of balance do I need to go for.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then
yeah.
I have no idea how to set up the suspension, but, you know, with the wings alone, you get to have a lot of fun just trying to maximize that and not spinning out mid-corner or actually making through Lesmo 1 with the best possible driving line, getting through it without drifting wide out of the exit.
Harder than it sounds.
It is harder than it sounds.
The vintage track.
And what you can also find is that if you don't have the wing balance just right, you can get into this weird, first you get a bit of oversteer and then it goes into understeer. That's sort of like just weirdness, and I think that just has to do with some.
That sounds
things.
Like some bottoming out ride height issues as
it could
well.
Be.
I'd have to take a look at it because sometimes the things, the aero affects the cars differently when it's pitching.
Exactly, yes.
So if you're pitching a lot under braking and the front just digs in, you have mechanical grip and aero grip.
Actually, that's what it was. So I had like lift off less understeer due to something, and it is probably in F1 you bet your ass it's about aero. There's the tiny bit of weight transfer probably has no effect compared to downforce.
What about the Group C?
Well, that one was interesting because I tried it at winter time, so just to look at, well, what is Monza like with the trees and everything, and it's spooky like all the other winter tracks, so you don't have any leaves. Just the thing you want to do heading into a long winter, right? Just I want to look at ugly trees in my game as well. But yeah, I tried that, and what's interesting about Monza is if you try something like Spa in the Group C cars at winter, you're struggling to get any temperature into the tires. Now, try Monza, and it is absolutely impossible because for most of the lap, you're just driving on a straight, and there's very little sustained cornering going on.
Right.
So,
I felt like the front right was particularly cold.
It is.
During normal conditions, so I can't imagine the ice cube you'd be driving on if it was winter.
Yeah. So
you'd basically be driving a three-wheeler at that point.
Yeah, it's very slidey.
I mean, Group C sounds like a absolutely ideal car to take around Monza, especially on the banking. So now you've mentioned I'm going to have to go after this. I'm going to have to go out there and give that a try, I think.
Yeah, the banking is the oval. The 10K layout is really fun for like crazy, not completely historically correct combinations, which is one of my I have issues getting a GT3 at a historical track. I just can't do it. I just can't. But for this one, I can make a just for sake of experimentation, I can make an exception for this one.
It's a good place to test your ride height, your spring stiffness under high loads. That's for sure. If I was going to take that car there, the first thing I'd do is I'd probably bump up the spring rates 2 clicks on both axles as a baseline. I guess you could just take default and see if you fly off the track and go 100,000 feet up in the air, but and then fix it. But I would be looking to increase the spring stiffness for sure. Because I can't imagine a bottom out during the middle of one of those banking, you know, the second bank, you know, the one where you enter at like max speed.
Yeah.
You bottom out there. You might as well just launch yourself into the lower stratosphere. the car that I've been impressed with, there's actually two cars I've driven recently. One positive, one kind of negative, but fun asterisk. The one that I've been highly impressed with is the Porsche Cup. Both of them, but more importantly, the 4.0. That's the one I have more recent experience with. I just had a fantastic... I think the car is just fantastic now. And I've featured the Porsche Cups, both of them. Actually, I used the Porsche Cup 4.0 as sort of like one of my earlier videos where I was doing side-by-side demos of, you know, this is a default setup and this is a custom setup, and you could tell from the cockpit view which one is, you know, more steady, more stable, and then you could, I also had the lap time as well. And I thought it was a great car to showcase that, just with some, and it doesn't have that many setup options to have to interface with. You know, you don't have to do springs, you don't have to do dampers at all. You just do ARBs and some diff work and some ride height changes, and that's it. But the other car that I had a mixed experience was, I did the BMW Group A. I did a BMW Group A build, which will be coming out at some point. But Oz, you're going to kill me for this one. But I embraced the fire, the tire fire. The car I found was so torquey, to the point where you couldn't get a good corner exit with it, at least with my skill sets. So I decided to just go back and go 100% open diff and just plant and just plow through the corner exits. And the car drove a lot better. It was a lot more fun. The AI in that race, I think the Group A still needs a... I should preface this. I haven't driven it after the patch. Before the patch, the AI was... It was like the speed differences were just too great between the player and the AI. And that's probably an example of the AI at its worst. But at the same time, once you get everybody strung out and the packs are sort of like elongated out, you can really start attacking the AI, and it becomes a lot more fun. You get more side by sides in that thing in that regard. But all right, so that's episode 12 of the Boltcast. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. Donk, why don't you go ahead and tell us any of the projects that you're working on for your YouTube channel?
Just firstly, I want to quickly say thanks to you guys for having me on the show. It's a huge opportunity for me, and I really appreciate it. And I'm working over on my YouTube channel, as everyone hopefully knows. I'm Donk. Hello. And I'm working on some more videos. I'm going to continue the What Is series, hopefully sometime very soon. And just basically making videos on various other sims as well. So I'm trying to have fun while doing it.
All right, great, man. So we're looking forward to that. I think the What Is series is one of, I think it's a signature series for you. There's nothing like it on YouTube, and I really enjoyed it. So Oz, what have we got going on for you? Are you just back in the cars tomorrow?
Shakare Bagua. Yeah, I am.
Any updates to the website recently?
I did add the BMW 2002 Turbo there, just as a
as a
thing that's upcoming. Same as the F Retro Gen 3, because we know that these two are coming. I don't know when the F Retro is coming. The BMW, I think they said that it would be coming soon. It just didn't quite make this.
I'd give it a week.
Yeah, something like
that. If not this weekend, maybe next weekend.
Yeah, so that one's coming. So that is my updates as far as Cars of AMS 2. Other than that, I'm just having fun with AMS 2. And learning pronounce Brazilian tracks.
Jacarepaguá. No.
Jacarepaguá.
Jacarepaguá. Jacarepaguá.
Okay, Donk. Okay. Donk, can you have a go?
That's enough for the day.
Jacarepaguá.
That's the best one I've heard yet. I think that's straight from Google Translate.
I think it is. Did you cheat? Was that actually Google? You pressed the pronounce button.
That was Google, yeah. I'm sorry, guys.
All right, for everyone out there, thanks for listening. We're going to have more on the Steelcast 27 channel for you. We're going to be bringing out the BMW 2002 as soon as it's introduced. More builds, more content. Thanks for listening. Take care.